Bet on Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the Designer, Courtney Cronin back at it again. Appreciate you guys for tuning in and showing love. Jam-packed show for you today because we got a report from Dan McNeil yesterday that the Chicago Bears have four coaches at the top of their list. And we got to look at those coaches, see how they fit in with this team, some of the pros and cons, and realistically, is that the direction the Chicago Bears are going to end up going? We'll talk about all that and more on today's episode of the Chicago Bears podcast. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page. Leave a five-star review. Y'all know what to do. Courtney, what's going on? How are you today?
Not bad. It's weird because we're on the Monday Night Football schedule, like, going forward. Yeah. So Tuesday is technically a Monday, and it's a little weird. But, you know, I think players, we'll hear from a couple players today that are just, like, still digging out from, you know, pretty embarrassing showing in San Francisco. And, you know, with four games left, once you kind of get to this point where they're 4-9, the head coaching stuff for next year really starts to kick into high gear. And all of the reports that you have to sift through about Ryan Poles and his future and what's, you know, what could potentially be there too. I heard Sylvie talking about it yesterday. Like, I don't know how much longer we're going to be talking about, like, specifically this team and the on-field contributions from this team outside of Caleb Williams. It's that point of the season where everything seems to be spinning towards January. And for some fans, I get it. You can't get there fast enough based on how the season has gone and wanting to know who the next head coach is going to be.
Listen, I think for Caleb Williams, after another 7-sack game, he's trying to get there as well. Hopefully we can get him there in one piece. And there are a lot of questions around this team, but I thought this was a really big tweet yesterday from Dan McNeil. He dropped that sources confirm these four coaches are on the Bears list for head coach: Ben Johnson, Brian Flores, Joe Brady, Mike Vrabel. They might want to talk to more candidates, but they are targeting these four more as soon as I get it. Hashtag I bear witness. I guess that's his new thing that he's got going. I
like his book.
Okay. All right. I missed that. I got to tap into the Dan McNeil book. Shout out to you. Maybe get him on the show. We'll see. But no, I think this is an interesting list for me, Courtney, for one reason, something we talked about the last time when we talked about your report with Ben Johnson being a part of, and of course, Mike Vrabel. But, like, you're going after guys who are going to command money that the Chicago Bears are not used to spending. And when I look at the guys at the top of this list, I mean, essentially you're going after three of the four top guys who are out there to be signed. Joe Brady has really shot up the charts as one of those guys who's going to clearly get a head coaching job. Ben Johnson is the number one offensive coordinator name out there. And Mike Vrabel, I mean, the belief around him has been massive among, of course, the fan base, but I think among NFL circles too, that, yeah, it didn't work the first time, but we also gave you Ryan Tannehill, and maybe if we give you a better quarterback, things will work out better. When you hear those names, does that sound kind of on par with where this Bears organization is directing their attention?
Well, it's early still, so those sound like the obvious names. Like, I see that report, and it doesn't really move the needle for me all that much, because those are the names that you expect. A team that has gotten it wrong so many times at the head coaching position, you know, you can take what they said last week at face value between Ryan Poles and Kevin Warren in that press conference. But one thing you have to, like, without a shadow of a doubt, know if you're inside that organization is you can't screw this one up. You can't, like, lowball people. You can't go for the easy candidate, the safe candidate, the candidate who might get paired because of a relationship to an agent, all of those things. You can't do it this time around that way, because unlike last time around, you have the number one overall pick at quarterback who you really, really can't screw up. You got to make sure that you nail this for his sake, because you will not get a return on investment if you don't. So to hear those names, the names that are going to be the top of everyone's list, like, I think it was on CBS, they reported, I think it was, what was it? It was on Sunday, this past Sunday morning, about Mike Vrabel being somebody who's going to be a target of the three openings right now: Jets, Saints, and Bears. Why is anybody surprised by that? To me, that's like an absolute no-brainer, because of the fact that there's three openings. You're going to interview one of the top head coaching candidates if you're one of those three teams. Now, we don't know how many more teams are going to enter the mix, because nobody else to this point has been fired. Right. So we'll see in a month from now, but I think that this is low-hanging fruit, to be honest with you. Like, but it doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. If the Bears are getting involved with the big names, that should at least lead you to believe, Now, it might not pan out that way, but believe that they're going to go about this the right way. And maybe some of the issues that they've had in the past where they have been, you know, shortchanging people and looking for a more economical approach. And, you know, certainly one thing that was stressed to me when I was reporting that story last week was that they want somebody with experience of doing this before. Yeah. Now, Ben Johnson and Joe Brady do not have that experience. Mike Vrabel and Brian Flores do. Does that mean that they're like tipping the scales, that tips the scales in their favor? Maybe, maybe not. But to get a wide candidacy pool where a wide pool of candidates where you have people who have, you know, who are names, like the staying power, the brand power, the name power of those people, that means something. It means that you're not trying to be, you know, the whole cutting edge thing of like, who's the up and comer that we can go get that people might not be thinking about. Do not overcomplicate this. This is like what teams do all the time is overcomplicate these head coaching searches when it just seems so obvious that there's several people that have to be on your short list. People who have done it before, who have been proven winners before. You can think about whatever you want about the way that Brian Flores' tenure ended with the Miami Dolphins and the same thing with Mike Vrabel and Tennessee Titans. Both of them left with winning records. So I think that, you know, that's a pretty strong spot for both head coach candidates to be in, whether it's with the Bears or with somebody else. And that's going to draw attention from teams because these guys are the ones who have either been like out for a year, like Mike Vrabel has. I know he's been a consultant with the Cleveland Browns, but like not an on-field coaching role.
Yeah.
Or someone like Brian Flores who, you know, people are probably a little bit more skeptical on that one because he does still have an active lawsuit against the NFL for workplace, like, you know, hiring practice discrimination, whatever, however it's specifically phrased. But like they're obvious names that you expect to surface this cycle because they haven't been in head coaching roles since they were, you know, last in them.
Yeah, it's so like to me when I look at some of the names that do pop out, a Joe Brady on this list, right? I look at it and the more I dig into the, you know, the ins and outs of what he's going through his coaching career, how he's built up offenses, how he's helped develop Josh Allen into a more accurate passer. You look at last season, the amount of picks that Josh Allen was throwing, then that number kind of takes a nosedive the second they bring on Joe Brady as the interim offensive coordinator this season. He's been one of the best, most efficient quarterbacks in the NFL, right? But it is funny because you kind of have to take a second and go, all right, I think I really like this guy, but is it just because Ben Johnson seems like such a layup that I have to go out there and find something wrong with him to go see if the next guy is good enough, right? For me, I look at Ben Johnson, I'm like, yeah, I stopped running the football in the second half a couple of important times, not just in the Bears game. We saw that last year in the playoffs in the most important game of the season. Is that who he is? When things get tough, is he going to be able to do it? And then I have to tell myself, like, all right, but he's also been the number one offense in the NFL over the last 3 years. Don't take the thing that is almost perfect and try and tarnish it because it's too good.
I think that's kind of where we're at. I get it. And I think they have PTSD because
100%
of the Matt Nagy hire.
PTSD, absolutely.
They were sold on, oh, this guy's worked with Patrick Mahomes. He has a Super Bowl ring. Yeah. He's been part of this offense. And then you get Matt Nagy to Chicago, and the pairing of the quarterback and the play caller doesn't look like it did at the last place he went. Now, why was that? A lot of different reasons. First off, the talent on the offensive side of the ball in Chicago, different than what it was in Kansas City. Nagy wasn't calling plays for Pat Mahomes. People forget that. So I get like, the answer is no, they don't, because that's what Bears fans live through. So they're hoping that, you know, by proxy of that, like you don't have the same scenario play out that way with this coaching cycle and this in the candidates that you have. Now, I think the biggest criticism I've heard from Bears fans about Ben Johnson and just like the way that this process is playing out in the very early stages of it, because he was among the first names that had surfaced after Matt Eberflus was fired, of people that they would be interested in talking to. Now, remember, two-way street. They may want to talk to somebody. Somebody may not want to talk to them. Yeah. We initially had heard that report from Adam Schefter on Get Up a couple weeks ago before the Eberflus firing that, you know, the idea of does Ben Johnson, who's going to get to like name his price, want to come to a place that has dysfunction? And every team does, but like there are levels of dysfunction that you want to deal with and you don't want to deal with. So if you're him, do you feel like you can call the shots a little bit more? Do you feel like you can dictate how this thing's going to go? and maybe that the Bears will have to bend to more of your will than you will of theirs. And I think there's some Bears fans out here who don't like that approach, who don't like the idea of somebody at least appearing to want to like circumvent parts of the process. But that's just called, that's leverage, Pat. Like that is like the bottom line, that some candidates are going to have more of that than others, because some candidates are going to be sought after more than others. Look at the last time around. Ryan Poles had a lot of leverage. He like had the, he could have gone to Minnesota. He chose not to. He came down to Chicago. There was a Giants interview in there for him as well. So that's, you know, it plays out in a similar fashion with the coaching search. Obviously head coaching candidates have more of an immediate impact, at least when you think about what anybody would be coming into for with this team next year and what the roster looks like right now, and knowing that you've really got to make sure that Caleb Williams takes the jump in year two, because you know so much of his rookie season early on was wasted in that regard. But I get the anxieties from Bears fans, but I don't think that there's anything that would like with these candidates. I mean, certainly everybody has like their flaws, but I don't think there's anything that like is akin to like the last two cycles that they went through with Matt Nagy and Matt Eberflus, thinking that you might get a version of that again.
Yeah. And I mean, you have to look at, you know, the difference of what they've been given as well, right? You're not coming into a situation with Mitch Trubisky and Allen Robinson here. You're coming into a situation with Caleb Williams, DJ Moore, Roma Dunze. You've got Cole Kmet at the tight end. Like there's something for you to come in offensively and work with. You're not trying to build something up from the ground up here. And I think that Caleb Williams has shown you enough in his rookie year for you to go into his second season and say, yeah, like we've got a good foundation to build off of. We can keep this thing moving heading into next season and get it going in the right direction. It is funny though, right? When I heard yesterday, right, Nick Saban essentially, I took it as sending a warning to coaches, right? And maybe he's a little bit jaded or he's a little bit upset that his former student Matt Eberflus gets fired in Chicago, and he's probably heard some things from Flus. But when he came out and he just said, you know, I know that Chicago's a beautiful city and you love everything about it, but make sure that you do your research. That's what really screams out in my mind when you say, you know, the Bears want to talk to all of these names, but do these names want to talk to the Bears? When Joe Brady and Ben Johnson do their research, are the Bears still a realistic option for them? Because listen, nobody's going to get it twisted. You don't have a great situation here, it feels like, anyway, between your ownership, your front office right now, and your president and GM's relationship. It seems like there was kind of a power struggle that has now been taken over by Kevin Warren. And when you hear Nick Saban say things like, you know, hey, learn from me. I knew the situation was ugly in Miami. I went there anyway, and that's on me. That to me is kind of basically him going, hey guys, Chicago may not be the dream scenario that you think it is.
And he learned from a situation where he and the general manager were not on the same page by any stretch. Him and Rick Spielman in that spot, that was not a good pairing. So if you're a head coach, that's a warning. That's a warning. It's a fair warning, because you have to make sure, A, you're not on the same timeline with the general manager. Like, so unless Ryan Poles gets an extension and we hear about it coming out like early January and they're linking those two up at the same time, then there is cause for at least pause to make sure, hey, do I have a good enough relationship? Is there enough synergy between myself and the general manager that we're going to be on the same page and not making decisions that either undercut each other or threaten one or the other person's career and stability? Like, so that's, I think that's a very, I don't think it's like a bad thing that Nick Saban said that. I also think that what he's saying about what he's hearing about Chicago, or just like, you know, because obviously you're right. I think it's important to bring up he and Matt Eberflus. I mean, he was here during Hard Knocks. Like, he and Flus are close.
He was his linebackers coach, right? When Flus was in college?
So he played for Flus, or excuse me, Flus played for him. And then one of his first coaching jobs was at Toledo.
Yes.
That's where Flus played, and then that's where Saban was coaching, and that's where Eberflus kind of got his start. So I'm sure he has heard things about what's going on behind the scenes. And, you know, Matt Eberflus's perspective on how the inner workings of this place work and everything else is going to be different than somebody else coming in. But people talk in this business. People behind the scenes in the coaching world all know that Chicago has been a difficult place to win in the last decade, in the last two decades. It has been a very difficult place, not just the division, but because of what's going on and who's pulling the strings behind the scenes, whether that's ownership, whether that's the role of the president, whether that's the role of the general manager. There is, you know, you're not going to walk in here and think, oh, wow, model of stability. You can have the label of, like, you know, being a charter franchise that only goes so far when you haven't seen the success, like as much of a launch pad of this as this place could have been for careers. It really hasn't been. It's killed a lot of careers. And I think that there are coaches, especially guys either wanting to do it for the first time or get back in, not somebody that's looking for like the next job. Which, I mean, yeah, to a degree, Ben Johnson, Joe Brady looking for the next job, all those candidates looking for the next job. But, you know, for let's take them, for example. First time head coach candidates, or really, it'd be their first time as a head coach. They've been head coach candidates before, at least their names have been thrown out. Now, Joe Brady, not as much, but certainly Ben Johnson was. If you go to a place that's going to be really difficult because you're going to be dealing with all the ancillary BS, in, you know, on top of a roster that needs a lot of work, certainly I think that was one thing that I took away from the game the other day. You can fire the head coach, puts a Band-Aid over a problem. This roster has some issues, whether it's effort, whether it's talent, whether it's a number of different things. This roster is far from complete, and you saw that the other day. The defense has taken an absolute huge step back, and I don't know. If you're a head coach candidate, you're going to look at those things and say, huh, and maybe we weren't sold. Maybe I'm not sold on what this team is now currently. Maybe it can get better, but right. I think you're looking at all those things. And then you'd be dealing with the politics of potentially like who's actually making the decisions behind the scene, whether it's the president, whether it's the general manager. Some guys are going to look at that and say, huh, that doesn't sound like where I want to start my career. That sounds like I want to stay away from that. And someone like Brian Flores, a Mike Vrabel, who then get a second chance to be a head coach again, could this be an early exit for them too? I think you have to factor those things in. And it's not just to, you know, say, oh, the Chicago Bears job is a bad job. I've come on here and said, I think it's the most attractive job based on the potential of this team. But politics factor into that too. All of the stuff, like being a head coach doesn't mean you're just in your office game planning 24/7. You're responsible for the entire franchise and dealing with the business side of being a football coach, which means that you have to, you know, if you want your voice to be the loudest in the room, it might not be in Chicago. I don't think they're going to hire somebody who's going to be domineering to the point where Kevin Warren has to take a back seat. I don't believe that to be the case. And I think that it's very clear by the way that this dynamic is set up right now, you know who's in charge here. And if you're a head coach candidate coming in, you better understand that from the jump. Otherwise, it could be a very rude awakening when you realize or you come to the, like, have your come to Jesus moment that you're not the ultimate decision maker.
And see, that is where a big amount of my questions come in, Court, with a lot of the reporting that we've heard on where the Bears want to go head coaching direction-wise, right? Because they say they don't want to have somebody who hasn't done it before. They want to have, you know, somebody who's a leader of men, is their statement.
Let's just talk about that real quick. Because if you don't have somebody who's a leader of men, every person you talk to should be able to be somebody that can lead a group of people.
Yeah.
Like that, I respect why that was said. And I get that DJ Moore put that out there and that's what Ryan Poles apparently told him. And like, we heard
Kevin Warren said the same thing too.
I get it. Like, okay. Like no shit. Like they should be the leader of men. Are you kidding me? Like you're the leader of the football team.
Yeah.
Yes. Like you should be able to lead the locker room.
That's the new ultimate cliche.
Like, it's just so stupid that's like, oh my God, like got to find a leader of men. No, let me go find the beta. That's who I want leading my football team. Are you kidding me? Like can we like never mention that again? Because it's literally the biggest cliche and it's the biggest no-brainer box that should be checked. You don't want somebody who's going to be like, all right. Like, and it could be, you could have a player's coach or you could have the hard ass who's my way or the highway. Either one can be a leader of men in their own way.
Yeah.
Let's just like stop and like, oh my God, like leader of men, check. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Like,
by the way, Matt Eberflus was viewed as a leader of men when we brought him in here. It's the first thing Ryan Poles said about him.
He had his own acronym. Like
LOM. There you go. There you go. It is. He came with the Hits principle. Ryan Poles came with LOM, leader of men. But no, I mean, we keep hearing these varying thoughts on like, because a Mike Vrabel is not going to come in here and bow his head. He's not. Brian Flores, Maybe because, right, he's on a little bit thinner ice as far as being a head coach, if you think about everything surrounding him. But realistically speaking, I don't think Brian Flores is coming in here and going, yes, whatever you guys say, that's how I'm going to run my program. Like, these guys are the guys who were in the locker room, who were the loud voices, who were the overwhelming voices. And like you said, I don't know if that's really what the Bears are going to want, because Mike Vrabel is going to push back on, hey, we want to take this young wide receiver here in the second round. We think that he could be a difference maker. We got nobody to protect our quarterback. We need an offensive lineman. You can't take a wide receiver. Like, you're going to have those conversations. And they say they like those conversations, but their actions to me don't dictate that you really do like the pushback, which I guess in theory would lean more to a Ben Johnson or a Joe Brady type. But why would they come here for their first stint if that is realistically the situation that's here, where Kevin Warren is saying it's my way or the highway? Like, I feel like you're getting two conflicting reports where it's like, yeah, they want the guy who's done it before. Mm-hmm. But the guys who've done it before have been successful, especially the two guys on this list. And they're not just going to walk in and go, no, yeah, everything I did back there, yeah, that didn't work. No, whatever you say, I'll do.
Well, and that's why it's so important for the head, like for Ryan Poles and his influence on this, to make sure that your view of what the team needs in the short and the long term syncs up with the head coach candidate that is going to ultimately be at the top of your list. Yeah. If it doesn't, then that could be a world of pain for both parties, that you come in thinking that you like, because, and that's the problem with their timelines not syncing up, which is what makes it tricky, which is why you have to make sure that your philosophy for this team, like, of course you're going to be thinking, can this be a place where I'm 5-10 years? That's, you know, nobody's ever going to be somewhere forever. Coaches are hired to get fired. That's how it works. But you can't think about it in that way. You got to think about the next 2 to 3 years, maximizing Caleb Williams' rookie contract. Does my view for doing that line up with the general manager's view of doing that? And that's where it really should stick to for now. And I know people are going to bring in, well, Kevin Warren seems to have a pretty domineering voice here. And, you know, his presence, you know, ultimately is going to factor into what the team needs. Cut through all of that for like the short term and think about, does the general manager, the person who's in control of personnel, can I work with that? Can there, because you don't want to be coming to blows over, you know, decisions on the roster, decisions in free agency, decisions in the draft in your first year, because that's going to set you up for failure. So if you don't see the biggest problem with the Bears being X and the other person seeing it as X, and if the other person sees it as F, like then it's not going to be a fit. And that doesn't matter whether you're a first year head coaching candidate or somebody who's trying to get back into being in that role. If that doesn't happen, then you're like, nobody's ever going to have the same control that Bill Belichick had. Nobody will. And that's what we need to like get out of our minds. No one's going to have full control over the roster and over personnel the way that they had it set up in New England. And I think that's the reason why he hasn't gotten much attraction this cycle as a head coach candidate. It's why he's taken the interview with North Carolina, because nobody wants that structure anymore. People have jobs and people want to be able to do their jobs without like somebody coming in and trying to like take all the power and make all the decisions and have it be their way or the highway. That's not the way that it works in 2024. And I don't think that it would, I don't think anybody like coming into Chicago would expect it to be that way, which, you know, that's one of the things that we've heard about Ben Johnson. You know, somebody who's had a lot of success, who has said no to head coaching jobs that were offered to him, the whole Washington thing last year. Is he going to come in and throw his weight around? Is he going to come in and be somebody feels like that expects it to, you know, get his way right away on like everything? If that's the case, then I don't know that that's the right dynamic for this team.
It definitely feels like it. I mean, listen, we heard on, I think it was one of the All City shows down in Dallas. He said Ben Johnson's asking price about 15 mil. That's what he's going to want.
Bears if have to have the stomach for that. If they don't, then why even interview him?
You know what I mean? And I think that's the thing. Like, you, when you come in as a coordinator who's accomplished nothing, like let's be real. They haven't won a Super Bowl. Yes, you've got the number one offense, but the reason that you kind of didn't go to the Super Bowl last season is because your offense in the second half decided to take a crap, and there's a lot of questions on your play calling. They're like, there's a lot of things where I can come back at Ben Johnson to say, you are great. You ain't that great just yet. You haven't done it as a head coach. if that is the case, that he's walking in the door saying, oh yeah, 15 mil sounds about right. Let's start the conversation there. We'll see where we end up. He's going to want to throw his weight around. He's going to want things his way. And listen, I get it. You want to know why? Because our way hasn't worked.
And again, you can point directly to that.
Yet again, what is this, third season in a row? We've got a quarterback who's top three in sacks in the NFL. Maybe Ben Johnson can change that the second that he walks in the door. And I do wonder where this Bears team is kind of at realistically with where they're leaning towards the kind of head coach they want, because I think you've got a ton of options. And I'll say this, I don't think you have really bad options. I think of these four names here, outside of Brian Flores, to me, because Brian Flores never was able to find an offense that worked. I have major questions on Brian Flores as a talent evaluator. He looked at Tua for 3 years and said, you can't play football.
Well, and the whole relationship there, I understand that he's gone out and apologized about that. It's been 3 years. He's been able to, you know, reinvent his own career and remind people, yeah, like, I'm still that dude who, like, can call a damn good defense and throw your team off. But do we automatically think that, like, he's not going to just go back to his ways if he's the head coach and all of that? And that's where you've got to really know how Caleb Williams, like, the only thing that they need to accomplish the next 4 weeks, make sure you have every bit of intel. So when Caleb Williams goes on vacation or goes to train or goes to do whatever he does in the offseason, you know, without any shadow of a doubt, we're picking the right guy that's going to mesh with the personality of our quarterback. And so not the head coach is going to run the quarterback out of town, more or less. And I'm not 100%. Saying that Brian Flores would come in here and do that. I think people can change. I think people can adapt. But I do find it kind of hard to believe that all of that will go away and he'll just be warm and fuzzy and rosy with the quarterback 3 years after what we know that came out, you know, and Brian Flores didn't think Tua could play. Well, somebody else thought he could play, and they've been successful to a point. They won a Super Bowl, haven't won a playoff game with Tua, but they've been successful to a point with him as a quarterback. Yeah. So that would be, and Brian Flores would know this, that that's going to be the number one question that comes up. If, you know, if indeed they do bring him in for an interview, if they want to hire him as a head coach, what have you learned, or what did you learn from those years that you had with Tua? What did you learn from the time away and the noise that came out? And have you actually changed your approach in dealing with the young quarterback? Yeah. Young quarterbacks are different than vets. Caleb's going to still be in a very, like, developmental stage of his career in year two. You better make sure that the person that's, like, his number one voice is not derailing that based on the way that they interact with the QB.
And listen, when Brian Flores had Tua as a young quarterback, very different than where we're at with young quarterbacks now.
And it was obviously Mike McDaniel's offense and all of those things, those things changed, changed Tua's trajectory as a quarterback, but, you know, and that would be on him too. Brian Flores is a defensive guy. Who are you hiring as an offensive coordinator? Who's the name that you're bringing on with you? Like, because if that's the case, if they go defense, so you mentioned the two names there, Joe Brady, Ben Johnson, never been a head coach before, so be their first opportunity to do so, and offensive coaches. If you hire a defensive-minded guy who's going to be calling his plays, doing the whole thing, like, they've got to bring in the biggest name imaginable for an offensive coordinator job. And that doesn't necessarily – I understand people hear, like, biggest name, and they think it comes with flash. Like oh, just like the name that you know out there, Mike Kafka, Drew Petzing, Arthur Smith, all of those things. I would – you know, that's great. Brand recognition, name recognition is good. But so, like, what about the results? Like, Arthur Smith is a name that I don't feel like is being talked about enough as a head coaching candidate here. Remember, and that's somebody too, Pat. Probably checks the leader of men box. So good, we can get that one out of the way. He led some men in Atlanta for a couple of years. But he, you know, personality-wise, the fit, look what he's done with two different quarterbacks, including your former quarterback, in Pittsburgh this year. I, in terms of personality and being able to fit with what the Bears structure currently is, on top of the fact that he's done it before as a head coach, has gotten a lot out of a team that's going to the playoffs with two different quarterbacks this year. I don't know why that name, more than the other ones, isn't, like, rising to the top of guys that they would be clamoring to interview for.
Because his time as a head coach was... I mean, listen, I guess it's different, a different quarterback, all that, but it was a disaster. You didn't develop a young quarterback. Your offense didn't work when you were. I mean, I get it. Atlanta was rebuilding.
He's 21-30 in 3 seasons as a head coach. Started in 2021 and had 3 years. And they had Desmond Ridder in those years. Yeah. They were searching for a quarterback. That was the end of what was 2021?
21 they fit, but all 3 seasons they finished 7-10. Yes. So 21 was, I mean, it was the best. Let's see, where's offense ranked here? Let me pull this up. Offensively, in his time as a head coach,
was the last year of Matt Ryan.
That last year of Matt Ryan, yeah.
And then they end up drafting Desmond Ridder, and they had Marcus Mariota. Yep. So, like, you were going through a period of transition there, which you wouldn't be going through in Chicago. So how can you judge, like, that based on what he's done this year? I feel like Atlanta, obviously, the experience, the body of work, all that factors in. But that doesn't mean that that's, like, you know, the top of his resume right now. Like, yeah. You had a journeyman quarterback who was injured in Atlanta, too, come in, and he was your quarterback in year 2 after you had to say goodbye to, like, the franchise legend in Matt Ryan. You were going through an active rebuild, and you didn't get more than 7 wins out of those teams. I don't think anybody's surprised by that, but I also don't think that that's a reason you should write him off as a candidate when he's shown you first year in Pittsburgh, a team that everybody had left for dead and said was going to finish last in the AFC North. Well, that team is one of 2 going to the playoffs right now.
Yeah. No, 100%.
A lot of it's because of what they've gotten out of their offense this year.
Offensively, touchdowns on the season, he ranked 27th his first year, 10th, and then 15th his third year. Like you said, ton of quarterback flux in there. Passing touchdowns, he ranked 24th and 26th and 25th in his time there. He was, I will say this, by if there's any, you got to give some credit to him. Of all of these guys that we've named, he is the one guy that was able to build out a staff that actually helped him on the other side. That final year on the defensive end of him being a head coach, that was a good Atlanta defense there in 2023, which was able to keep them in games, and they were able to find ways to score and win some tough games that maybe you don't expect them to win, how they get themselves to 7-10. So it's not like he was the worst head coach you've ever seen. I do have concerns on it, but outside of that, like, if you look at the flip side of it, Corey, like, Brian Flores could never find an offensive coordinator that could make something work out there. Mike Vrabel, I mean, I would say he found offensive coordinators because the offensive numbers would say that they were okay, but then you look at those numbers without Derrick Henry on the field, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, no, this guy couldn't find an offensive coordinator either. So I think you do have to have those questions, especially when you talk about a guy who is more of a defensive guy, if you're going to go that route, or even an offensive guy, right? You can't just go out there and say defense don't matter. You got to build this defense. For some reason, we got to fix this run defense coming in the next season. You have to build out an entire staff that's going to get the job done. And Arthur Smith, out of anybody on this list, is the only one that's been able to do that final year in Atlanta, where everybody kind of was on the same page. And maybe he's learned. I'm not saying the second stint doesn't hurt, because you get all the experience from the first one, you get fired, you go out, you run the offense again, you make it happen. But I also watched Josh McDaniels do that. Not nearly as successful as Arthur Smith, but some guys are just coordinators. I do wonder if that's the case for Arthur Smith. Let's finish it out with this, because I do think this is the big question, though, right? We heard this from Adam Johns yesterday. He talked about it on his podcast, Hogan Johns, and of course he talked about it tweeted this out later, I should say. I said this came up on the podcast, so I'll add it here too. Matt Eberflus got a 5-year contract. Ryan Poles has a 4-year deal. The Bears signed Ryan Pace to an extension before he started his head coaching search that ended with Matt Nagy. To my knowledge, Poles hasn't been extended. Mm-hmm. Should we expect an extension if Ryan Poles is really going to be the one who is leading this head coaching search?
I would think so. I would think you have to, because that's going to be the number one or number two, number three, like, top questions that these candidates are going to ask, because the timeline with yourself and the general manager has to sync up. Otherwise, you're going to feel like you're in a weird state of flux. And yeah, oftentimes we've seen that happen where there's a general manager who's been around for a couple years, kind of hanging in the balance, and a new head coach comes in. The GM usually finds his way out, not that long after. Now, they've committed to Ryan Poles, or at least like publicly they've said it, like he's the general manager going forward for 2025. And certainly everything beyond that is up in the air, which it is in this business. You would imagine they would do that, like, and they're not a team that leaks these, that like publicly puts these things out, like, oh, so-and-so got an extension. George McCaskey doesn't talk about it publicly. I've asked him at owners' meetings about contract extensions. It's something he will not, something, it's a path he won't go down publicly. Right. But we have to find out if that's going to happen, because if it doesn't, and you're letting Poles go into the final 2 years of his contract, and, you know, putting him in a situation where he's, you know, not linked up with a head coach candidate who may get a 4 or 5 year contract. I actually, you know, the whole thing with Poles, I was under the impression that the belief like was for why he came down here was he got the extra year, which was 5 years, not right. 4 years. So I don't know that to be true. What was said on that podcast, as far as him getting a 4 year contract, I was under the impression he has a 5 year deal, which was part of the reason he didn't take the Minnesota job on top of, you know, the security, because he had to have the security to go through a full rebuild the way that they wanted to here. And in any event, 3 years left, let's say, or 2 years left, because it's, you know, 22, 23, yeah. 24, he would have to have some sort of assurance that his timeline will be on whoever the head coach is, like whatever the head coach's timeline is going to be, to let you believe, like, be that stability. That's just straight up stability of we can work on this plan together. Where if somebody's got less time on their contract, they're going to try to see it through more quickly than a head coach might try to play the long game.
Yeah. And I think you have to have a conversation on it being a huge concern in your coaching interviews, right? Hey, I get, you know, we're having this conversation now, but he going to be here mm-hmm. or somebody else going to come in and want to replace me in a year? Like that's got to be something where it gives you more, like you said, stability, more leverage going into these head coaching meetings where they don't have to worry about whether the GM's going to be in the room, at least at face value, right? Because you've gotten that contract done. I would assume that we hear this probably pretty quickly, either close to the end or after the season is over, right?
Well, I would imagine you'd find out during head coaching interviews because, like, let's say, you know, if there's a scenario where there's somebody that the Bears absolutely love at head coach, and I know that Ryan Poles is going to be leading it, and we've heard that it's ultimately his decision, but what if it's not? What if there's somebody that like doesn't have the same view as the general manager, and the Bears discover as they go through this process that they really like this head coaching candidate? Now, yeah. You would think Ryan Poles isn't going to hire someone who's going to want him out in a year or two, but you never know. So I would imagine like we're not going to hear it like right after the start, right after the offseason starts. I would imagine that's something that would pop up after they get somebody hired and put them kind of at the same timeline starting then. I don't think you would extend him before you hire the head coach.
Okay. We'll see what happens. I think that's going to be a very interesting thing to play out. And, you know, finding out the length and the terms, which you almost never do, of those contracts is it will be interesting, because it'll really see if it's synced up with the head coach or if they have more of a belief in Ryan Poles than not. A lot of people talking about him possibly being on the hot seat. I don't know if I'm there just yet, but it is getting it's getting a little warm. Protect my quarterback. That's all I've been saying since like the first week of the season and last offseason. And the quarterback before that. It's just me. Appreciate you coming on as always, Courtney. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Let us know your thoughts in the comments below. Get down and talk with you guys as well. For Courtney Cronin, it's your boy Pat the Designer. Back at it again. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down, one love. Peace.